Tuesday, February the 11th, I hoarded my strength like a miser, waiting for the diplomatic reception, getting up only to go and get my hair done, so that I would be as look as well as possible for the 7 o'clock reception, which was business suit. About 6:45, the dean, the ambassador of Nicaragua, came upstairs without Mrs. Sevilla Sacasa, who is still taking care of their very ill little child, just out of NIH. And also the ambassador of the Netherlands and Madame Van Rooyen came up because they would be leaving very soon. It was rather to say goodbye. Chief Justice and Mrs. Warren, who are always on hand as an ornament and a standby, and the Secretary of State and Mrs. Rusk. I'm getting so I have the inclination to just go up and lean when I'm around either one of them. And I'm delighted to say that my old friend John Sparkman and Ivo Sparkman were there. He's down the line just a little bit in foreign affairs, and the others were out of town. And Angie and Robin Duke. The Spanish ambassador, a very handsome man, was there too to present a letter to the president, something about their recognition of Russia. He and Lyndon disappeared for a while we had the rest of us had a drink and some conversation. And then Lyndon, the dean of the corps, Linda Bird and I, the secretary and Mrs. Rusk, came downstairs preceded by full pomp and panoply of flags. We stopped and had our picture made at the bottom, and then walked into the blue room to receive, in proper protocol order, the ambassadors from all the countries, the charge d'affaires, then the four new ambassadors who were there to present their credentials, the ambassador of the Dominican Republic, Mrs. Bonilla, the ambassador from the Kingdom of Libya and Mrs. Abadia, the ambassador of Peru and Mrs. Pastor, who replaced the Berkmeyers, who've been here since time began, and the ambassador from Sweden and Mrs. Debesh. Then came by the OAS ambassadors, who had been held in another room, I hope with ample drinks and plenty of hostessing from members of the cabinet, came by to be greeted by us in their turn. Later on, Marge McNamara and I were talking about it, and she said, yes, she thought it had helped out to have the cabinet wives hostessing in various rooms, and that she would always be glad to do it, but she thought it would be a very useful thing if we could either send them a list of those who'd accepted and in such future function, or maybe, I suggested, we could get together for a cup of tea and just about 45 minutes briefing, passing out the list of those coming, and just say, now we hope that each of you will light on all those that you know like a duck on a June bug and help make them feel at home, or perhaps choose those that seem to be left alone and uncomfortable. I think it's a good system, but not one yet thoroughly worked out, although I did see Jane Freeman busily engaged in talking to several of them. And of course, Mrs. Rusk always does a superb job, and Phyllis Dillon is just as kind and socially smooth as anybody could possibly be. Besides the cabinet itself, there was quite a cadre from the State Department there. The Balls, the Harrimans, the David Bells of AID, and many of those who make the wheels turn, right on to Mrs. Wilroy, who is the hostess over at Blair House. And then a sizable group of undersecretaries. I hope to give them the chance for a gay evening that we might not get around to with them at the White House in any other way. And also, it would have been my joy to know that they were really working on the ambassadors whose party it was to mix and mingle with them. The Cy Vances from the Defense Department, the Katzenbachs from Justice, Franklin Roosevelt from Commerce, and of course our newly appointed man to help on a broad field, Tom Mann, as well as a coterie from Lyndon's office staff, the Mac George Bundys, the Larry O'Briens, Reedys, Salingers, Schlesingers. I was glad to see Schlesinger there and got a chance to dance with him. All of this group were already in the East Room because most of them we have shaken hands with many times, so that when we finished with the last Ambassador, we too went in the East Room, the band struck up, and we began a very merry dance. The dean led off with me, and then I had a whirl with everybody from the French ambassador to Dobrynin of Russia, which I'm sure caused all the ladies to get out their pads and pencils and the group of reporters. But he was covering the territory because he got around to Lindbergh, too. He said that Siberia was the land that I ought to see, that it was endless, that it was full of vast forests and diamonds. I don't know whether he was using that as a figure of speech, whether he actually meant some untold mineral wealth or maybe even diamonds themselves. I was beginning to worry for fear an Arab wouldn't dance with me when, delightfully enough, the gentleman from Kuwait, who has one of the most beautiful wives in the Corps, came up, and we did a waltz around the floor. I suggested to Lyndon when I got a chance to dance with him that he get geographical, from continent to continent, so to speak, in his dancing, and I noticed that he did it, and did it beautifully. It was pleasant to run into the people that I've known through our travels, the Knuth Winnefelds of Denmark, the ambassador of Cyprus, and Mrs. Rossides. When I was dancing with him, we consoled with each other about his unhappy island, the Diops from Senegal, and Madame Platzer of Austria, whom I've known in speech class, and my old friends, mi amigos especial, the ambassador of Mexico and Senora Carilla Flores. If Ambassador Matsos of Greece was there, I didn't get to dance with him, and more's the pity. Mrs. Minmin Siaglu from Turkey was there, looking as beautifully dressed as usual. And our recent friend and house guest, Ambassador Napstein from Germany. Also, Lady Eschenheim and the Ambassador of Jamaica, memories of one of the most pleasant little trips we had. And Mrs. Tejera Paris, wife of the Ambassador from Venezuela, who is a member of my international club and one of the most attractive members of the whole ambassadorial corps. The new Ahmeds, brother and sister-in-law to the Ahmeds who had just left from Pakistan, were among the most attractive couples on the floor. But I looked in vain for the handsome face of B.K. Nehru of India. The Ingans of Norway brought back memories of one of our last and most pleasant journeys, the one to the Scandinavian countries. A few, not as many as I would have liked because it's so colorful, came in their native costumes, and these were nearly always from the African continent. I remember one gentleman in a black beaded hat and vast robes of red and green and black sort of plaid that he had thrown around his shoulder, like a cape or a sari, and a big belt full of ornaments. Next time we must try to figure out some music that is particularly appealing, that is popular on the continent of Africa, and some that's popular in Asia, because I think we would have gotten more of the representatives from those two continents onto the floor dancing if we'd had something that they felt that was their favorite. That was a good buffet in the dining room, going all the way from steamship roast of beef and whole turkeys and hams to our always reliable chili con queso. But I didn't get that far down, and after dancing with as many as I could find, it suddenly dawned on me that I was beginning to feel a little weak in the knees, and I murmured goodbye to one or two at about 8:30 and went upstairs, climbed in bed, had supper on a tray, a good long talk with Linda, and early to sleep, hearing later that Lennon stayed and danced until 9:30, and that many said that it had been the gayest White House reception for foreign diplomats that they could remember. I'd give a lot if that's just not nice party talk, because this is our one point of contact with most of them, with those from Africa, with those from Asia, in the whole year, perhaps in our whole administration, and I would like for it to be a pleasant and memorable one.